My name's Eddie, and I have the privilege of picking up part two of our series, Life Apps. And if you guys weren't here last week, our big idea was we need to be doers of the word, that is God's word, and not just listeners or hearers only. But those of us in the room and those of us in the world that claim to follow Jesus, there comes some application that needs to take place in each and every one of our lives. And when we apply the truths of the gospel, that our lives can look and reflect more like Christ and our influence in the world can be much greater. That when we connect the dots, when we begin to really trust God with our lives, when we begin to not lean on our understanding, but put our faith and trust in Him on a daily basis, things can be different. Everything can change. And that was our hope last week for you guys. And as we go over the next 5 weeks, we're going to look at particular points, particular application points, particular life apps for me and for you to identify with, to understand, to absorb, and to transfer from what we know to what we do. And the way we want to do that, though, is by telling you what happened to me last night. See, guys, last night I had the privilege of taking our students, the middle school and high school kids, to the Memphis Redbirds game. If you guys aren't a fan of baseball, the Memphis Redbirds is our AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. And they have a beautiful park downtown called AutoZone Park. And as I was driving downtown, and as I got into the stadium, I just looked around at the history of the park. But there are buildings around the town that look like they're 500 years old. They really do. I mean, there are buildings that are old. There are buildings that are just monuments. There are murals. There's just things downtown that as I began to sit there on the bluff with my students, I began to contemplate and think about all the different things about Memphis, the images, the symbols that I think about when I think about my hometown. Because, guys, I was born and raised here. Anybody else? All right. But see, as I was thinking about those things, other images began to come up in my brain, like the fact that in Memphis, right, we're a music town. Like, we have the history of Elvis. We have the history of blues. We have the history of rock and roll. We have these images and these symbols that kind of come up, and we think about those things, and we equate those with Memphis. What about barbecue? We think about barbecue. We think about Memphis. And we think about the images of the rendezvous. We think about you know, what it means to just sink your teeth into a barbecue nacho like I had last night and how delicious that is. And do you want extra seasoning? Absolutely, I do. But that's what we do, right? When we think about Memphis, we think about certain images, and we think about certain images, we think about Memphis. And I was having this, like, this go back in time type moment last night about images of my hometown. There's that one, yeah. There's professional wrestling, right? There's the King. And we think about this stuff, right? We think about our hometown, we think about Memphis, and we equate images with our town and our town with images, and that's just how we are. But what we want to talk about today is not just our hometown, but even a more recognizable image, a more recognizable symbol than that. And what we want to talk about today is a symbol that's the most recognizable symbol in all the world. That when you think about it, you begin to make connections. You begin to have a story and a history about that particular symbol too. Because just like all the pictures we just saw of Memphis and the history and the story behind that and the understanding that when you look at those things, you think Memphis. What we're going to talk about today is even more recognizable than that. And you begin to make some theological and even some understandings about these things as well. And what we're going to talk about today is the cross. The cross. And we're going to look at the cross today. We're going to talk about the story behind the cross. We're going to talk about what this symbol means, what this image means, what it means to understand the cross, and how the cross fits into our life and how our life fits into the cross. Because you see it on hospitals, you see it around necklaces, you see it all over the place in our world. Because the cross is a very, very recognizable symbol. There's a story behind it. There's a history there. And us understanding that history today will help us understand how we can apply some of the truth that's found within our Gospels, within our New Testament, within our Scriptures. But before we get there, guys, I have to ask you guys a question. Who in here, and we're all friends here, who in here has been hurt before in their life by someone else? Who in here has been lied to? Who in here has been cheated, manipulated, made fun of? Who in here has had someone take advantage of them? Someone steal from them? How does that make you feel when that happens to you? How does it make you feel in your past when that person did that one thing to you? Because when I think about those times in my life, I feel like sick to my stomach. I feel like a rage brewing inside of me. I feel like it changes me that I think about those things and it has an effect. And then I think about how I reacted to those times as well and how that had a change on me and an effect on me. And then I think about what my responses look like. What did I immediately want to do? And two things came to mind. The first thing I wanted to do was exact revenge. I wanted to slap the hand that slapped mine, right? I would immediately get at that person for whatever they did to me. But a more subtle approach that I usually took was that I would hold a grudge against that person. And when someone hurt me or lied to me or manipulated me or took something from me, I held a grudge against that person for an extended period of time. And maybe I'm not the only one in the room that's done that before. And what's funny, though, right, about holding grudges is that sometimes it feels kind of good. I mean, think about it. I mean, you have something over someone. Like, you know you're in the right and they're in the wrong, and you kind of just kind of, you can hang that over them and say, yep, I've got this on you. I've got this on you. And then when you hold a grudge, it almost kind of feels okay. Even though deep down it's weird, even though deep down you're not sure, even though deep down you're like, man, I wish this hadn't happened to me, but since it did, I'm going to take advantage of it, and I'm going to hold this grudge out over this person, and I'm going to let them feel kind of how I feel. And if you're really like me, you've kind of dreamed about what it would look like to go off on that person. You kind of think about what scenarios you could play out in your mind about how that could actually go down, right? Maybe you're at the grocery store, right? And you're about to pick up a box of cereal, and there they are right in front of you. Or maybe you're at the movies and you're about to get that big, huge bucket of popcorn with as much butter as you can stand on it, right? And they're right there in front of you. Or maybe you're at the post office and you've got plenty of time there, right? So you're just going to wait and you're seeing them right in front of you. And with all your courage, with all your might in your mind, right? You say, I'm going to tell them what's up. I'm going to let them know how I feel. I'm going to express myself in such ways that they will write books about me. So you go up to them. And you clear your throat, or you tap them on the shoulder, right? I got long arms. I can do that. Tap them on the shoulder. And you lay into them like you're Tom Cruise from A Few Good Men, like you're Ben Matlock, like you're Perry Mason, like you're all the lawyers from Law & Order, SVU, CSI, MTV, all the different things. And you're just going after this guy, right? I mean, just pouring into this person, all the things they've done to you, how they've hurt you. You tell them they can't handle the truth. You give them all these different things, right? You just lay into them. And a crowd's gathering around you in your dream, right? I mean, you've got people coming up and like, whoa, there's no way this guy's doing this in the middle of a grocery store. There's no way. But you're loving it, right? Because you've got all this ammunition. You've got all this fuel. And you're just pouring into them, right? Ladies, you're like this right here. Guys, you're like bouncing around like this right here. I mean, you're just pumped and excited. You're just going after these people because of what they did to you, how they hurt you. And guys, you feel great about that in your mind, in your dream. I know I do. I feel fantastic. But what's funny is right when that person's about to say, I'm sorry, right? He's got the tears welled up in his eyes. He's like, or she's like, and then all the people around is like, they're going to apologize. They're going to say, I'm sorry. They're going to say, I'm sorry. They're going to apologize. Right when they're about to do that, you go, no, and you walk off. And you leave them just laying there, right? And everybody in the crowd around you is like, yeah, this is amazing. That was the most incredible discourse I've ever heard. They're going to write books about this guy. It's going to be incredible. Right? Y'all don't have that dream? Or maybe something similar to that? But when you snap out of that dream, right? When you return to your cubicle or you relax back or get back up out of your chair because that was just a dream, you realize, I mean, as funny as that is and as awesome as that sounds, when I really begin to think about, for me specifically, when I really begin to think about holding on to a grudge or getting back at that person, I never really feel better about it. Like holding on to grudges for me just makes me feel bad. It makes me feel worse than I did before. And the longer that I've held on to grudges, the longer that I've held on to the problems or the situations or that person in my mind that did that one thing to me, lied to me, stole from me, took something from me, the longer that seems that grudge seems to be a hold of me and take a hold of me and hold on to me. The longer I've gotten deeper into that grudge against that person, for whatever reason it was, and guys, I know in this room there's some bad things that have happened to you by certain people in your life. But the longer that I've held on to them, the more they've embedded themselves into my life. And there have been times in my life where I've literally been crushed emotionally by the weight of the grudge that I was holding against someone. Because that's the crazy thing about grudges, is that the more you hold on to them, the more they just shackle themselves to you, and they won't let you go until you let them go. And our prayer for you today, going forward, for every week that we have together at River City Church, is that you will allow the Spirit of God to help you release the grip of the grudge that you hold in your life. That you will allow the Spirit of God to work within you to give you the confidence and the strength and the knowledge to know that, hey, I can just let go of whatever it is from whomever has done what over the course of my life. I can just let it go. But we know it's not easy. And we know it's going to take some time. We know it's going to take some practice. We know it's going to take a little bit of help to get along the way. But see, that's why we're here today. And that's why we're going to talk about a symbol today, an image. And to get into the image and that symbol today of the cross is going to take us where I think we need to go as it relates to letting go, releasing the grip of the grudge we have in our lives. But you see, many of us, we don't understand the depths, and I didn't either until I began to research even more about the cross and what it means and what it meant at the time that it was instituted as a torturing apparatus. You see, guys, 2,700 years ago, that is 700 years before the time of Jesus, there was these nations that lived in the middle of the earth, Mediterranean area. And they began to nail and rope people to crossbars, much like this one right here, and nail them up there as a way to humiliate them, as a way to mock them, as a way to tell everybody, hey, you don't mess with the state. You don't mess with the government. You don't break our rules or we will break you down. And for 500 years, the Romans perfected this torture device. And they made it personal. And they got in your face with it. They would have the vertical post lining the roads of some of the towns of the conquered areas they would have to let people know, hey, if you step out of line one bit, you could be put on a cross. Hey, if you don't listen to what we have to say or do the things we have to say, you could be here one day. And then some of the worst in the town would be condemned to crucifixion. And people could literally walk by them and see them hanging on a cross, dying a slow and painful, excruciating death, humiliating, in your face. Because what Rome was trying to get people to understand when they began to develop crucifixion was that, hey, listen, this could be you. And guys, we have this image of the cross, right? That it's high up and it's elevated and it's far off. But the reality is, let's bring it more close to what it really was, which was it would line the street so kids, moms and dads would be walking from to and fro, and all of a sudden they would look to the right and see a man or a woman hanging there completely naked, vulnerable, eye to eye with them, crucified. And Rome's message was, this could be you. And when you look at the cross, you will never be the same. Cicero, a Roman philosopher, he said, what we need to do is try to get the cross out of our minds, away from our bodies, out of our eyes and our ears, because it was the most disgusting of all things to him that the Romans ever did. That when you think about the cross, a lot of times we feel it's just an uplifting thing. It's an incredible thing. But the reality was the cross was a very demoralizing thing. It was a very corrupting thing. It was humiliating. When we begin to understand the image of the cross and the story behind the cross and the history of the cross, and we transfer that to the cross that Jesus died on, we begin to see some similarities and yet some contrasts as well. You see, the cross that Jesus died on, there was something different about it, because as Rome was sending a message to people that you could be here, God of the universe was sending a message to us as well, saying that I put my son here. That his death for you and for me was personal. It was in your face. It was relational. It was right up there, up against you and you up against it. And when you recognize and understand the cross of Jesus Christ, you understand that God was sending a message to us. And that message is loud and clear. That message is, I love you. That message is, I'm pouring grace out upon you. The message is that you have received mercy. And ultimately, what you get when you go to the cross of Christ is you get forgiveness poured out on you. You see, guys, the scripture teaches that we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And yet, while we were still sinners, Christ went to the cross for us. Why? So that we become sons and daughters of God. And when we understand and attach those words to the image of the cross and the image of the cross to those words, it gives us some opportunity and some ability that many of us, I think, we've forfeited or we haven't engaged in or we haven't interacted in as it relates to letting go of the grip of the grudge in our life. But see, what happened at the cross wasn't just God pouring out his love, mercy, grace, and forgiveness on us so that we can just swim in it. No. It was done so that we could transfer that to other people in our lives as well. That when we have the cross and we look at that image and we look at the image and we look at the cross, we understand that God has given us love, grace, mercy, and forgiveness to pass that along to anybody, to everybody, at all times, if we understand, if we embrace, and if we trust in the cross. You guys see how heavy this is? You guys see how real this is for God? How important it is, how the scriptures teaches this. Because you see, guys, the bottom line is this. We are to love, we are to show grace, we are to show mercy, and ultimately forgiveness because God bestowed that upon us. And as followers of him, that's his request, that's his opportunity and his availability for us to take that and to go do that. Why? Because forgiven people forgive. Forgiven people, forgive. That's our application today. That's what we do starting today. But see, I know you guys, because I know me. And it's so easy for me to say forgiven people, forgive, but it's so difficult for me to actually begin that process. So what we want to do is take just a little bit of a time out and listen to one of Jesus' students, Paul. And what he had to say to a church in Rome that was going through some persecution, that was going through some missteps, that was having to endure pain, heartache, suffering, manipulation, being lied to, being outcast because of their faith in Jesus. And as he has begun to remind them throughout the entire letter he wrote to them about the cross of Christ and the freedom that he bestows upon us to love and to have grace and mercy poured out onto others, and ultimately forgiveness, he also says something about forgiveness and how you can tangibly, practically get this done. So for those of you sitting in here who have had the worst of the worst happen to you, or you feel like you have, or you yourself have beat yourself up because of something you've done yourself, and you can't forgive yourself, understand that Paul has something to say about that too. So in Romans chapter 12, I'm just going to briefly just walk through a few things. And in verse 17, it says this. It says, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. But understand, Paul knows that you've had something happen to you. Someone treated you, mistreated you, and it is completely deplorable. But we don't have the opportunity. We don't have the ability to just repay them evil for evil. We don't have to slap the hand that slaps our hand. He's saying if we want to, we can give thought. We can back up just a little bit. Take it all in and realize, hey, let's think about this. Let's do what's honorable in the sight of all. Verse 18, it says, listen, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Now, I know you're sitting there like, I can't do that with this guy, with this girl. Now, understand, I didn't say partner up with them. And neither did Paul. We didn't say go over in the backyard and, you know, have hot dogs and hamburgers and hang out every weekend. What Paul's saying is, guys, listen, you can, as far as it depends on you, you can let it go. You can forgive them. You can let them off the hook. You can live peaceably with all. verse 19, it says, "Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it's written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." You see, we get confused. And as I've grown up, as I've become a 30-year-old married father of two, I've learned that, man, I do a very poor job of avenging myself. I do a very poor job of keeping it clean and keeping it fair. But what Paul's saying is that avenging yourself is not your job. Revenge is not your job. It's God's job. So let God be God. You be you. You let it go. Let God take care of the rest. But what we tend to do, right, is we tend to think, well, if I just let them off the hook, if I just tell them that you don't owe me anymore, then God's just going to let them get away with it. But Paul just right here said, no. That's not what's going to happen. God's going to handle them. God's going to work on them too, just like he's working on you. And at the end of the day, it's better for you just to let go and let God do what only God can do and the way God can do what he does. He gives even more reason. Verse 20, he says, hey, to the contrary, like the opposite of revenge, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. No. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. No. For by doing so, you'll heap burning coals on his head. And guys, what Paul's saying is that, hey, do some good things. In the event that you think you can, if you can muster, handle it, do some good things to that person that's hurt you, that's lied to you, that's taken from you, that's stolen from you, that's manipulated to you, or lied about you. You have an opportunity to do good to them. Because when you do, this is what this whole burning hot coals and heaping them on their head and that kind of weird stuff, that's first century stuff we don't understand anymore. What he's saying is that you could unlock remorse in their heart. You could unlock remorse in their heart. That's an option for them too. That even though they've hurt you and even though they've gone to lengths to make your life miserable for those of you who have had that experience happen, Paul's saying, hey, listen, if you do good to them, God might continue to be working on their heart and they might realize, what have I done? How have I treated her, him, what have you? And they get their heart right as well. In verse 21, it's kind of a summary. He says, listen, he says, don't be overcome by evil. Don't let this situation weigh you down and crush you. But overcome evil with good. I mean, ultimately, what do you want in this person's life? Paul's saying. Because those of us who follow Jesus, those of us who understand the cross, understand that, hey, forgiveness is something that was kind of spread out among everybody, right? I mean, it's something that anybody can take advantage of if they want to. Paul's saying, hey guys, listen, you can do good. You can continue to push good in the face of evil. You continue to love in the face of hate. You continue to show mercy in the face of resistance. And when you do, whoever that person was, whatever that person did, has got to seriously contemplate where you're coming from with that. And where you're coming from with that attitude, that direction, that application, is your understanding of the cross. Imagine the Romans. Imagine this church in Rome struggling with what do I do and how do I act and react? And Paul's like, listen, you don't have to get back at them. You can embrace God's forgiveness, not only for you and what you've done in your life, but for them. That you can forgive people because you've been forgiven. That you can let God avenge you, go to bat for you, be your advocate. And that ultimately you can overcome evil with good. But guys, be honest, is that better? Isn't that better? Isn't that what we all ultimately want? But the way that happens, guys, the way that happens in our life to go from here to here is we've got to begin to apply forgiveness in our life. Got to. But once again, guys, I know, right? There's somebody in the crowd. There's somebody here who's like, Eddie, it's just too fresh. It's just too real. This was done to me for periods of time. This was bad, Eddie. You don't understand my story. And the truth is, guys, I don't understand your story. I know my story. But I also know that Jesus wants you to get into his story. He wants you to get into where he was on the night that he was betrayed by a friend. On the night that he was mocked in that garden and arrested. On the night that he was beaten in the face. On the night that he was put on some trial for blasphemous statements that you can't make when you're God. Where he's whipped. Where he's beaten with rods. Where he's scourged. Where he's laid out in front of everybody, a big, huge crowd, completely naked, completely demoralized. His story says he went to a cross, carrying this crossbar on his shoulders as far as he could, and then he dropped because he could not carry it any further. His story says that he went to a cross and had nails driven right below here, right here, to hold him up. Only thing holding him up were nails. And the words coming out of his mouth from the cross wasn't, "Get him, God." It wasn't, "I'm holding on to this forever, God, against them." It wasn't, "I'm going to pick every face I see out in the crowd and I'm going to make sure that I hold on to this forever and that's how it's going to be." No. What did Jesus say? Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Guys, that's the opportunity we have as well for those that follow Jesus. We have that availability to go out of our way almost sometimes, to get through the issue, to get over the stuff, to just let go and forgive. But guys, it won't happen unless we remember the cross. It won't happen unless we engage the cross. And Jesus is saying, "Please, just give me a chance. Just give me a chance. You say you love me. You say you hear my word. Now do what my word says. Forgive. Forgive. Forgiven people, forgive." And guys, let that be our heartbeat as I continue to let that work out in my life. Because guys, it's not easy for the guy that stands up on the stage to do any of the things that we preach to you guys or explain to you guys or encourage you guys with. We're all in this thing together. We've all been hurt. We've all been robbed. We've all been cheated and taken advantage of. But Jesus is saying, "Listen, you can let it go if you want to. You can let it go and let me be God. And when you do, your present and your future can be different. This literally can change everything in your life. How you view people, your family, how you view your job. Everything can be different. We release the grip of the grudge. We say, 'Yes, God, I will listen. I will obey. I will forgive because you went to the cross for me. And because at the cross, you showed love. You showed mercy. You so great. And so ultimately, God, you showed me forgiveness.'" So guys, can this be us? Can this be us today? Can we figure out who's going on inside our mind right now and just realize, "Hey, I need to let it go. I need to let go." Release the grip of the grudge. Give yourself that opportunity today. Or at least entertain the possibility of that. Because God, guys, God loves you. God wants better for you. He wants you to let go. He wants you to let go. So remember the cross, the symbol, the image, what it means, the understanding of it, the reality of it. And let it change everything for you.